We find in Volume 1, Part 3, Chapter 53 of the book Al-Irshad by Sheikh Al-Mufid that he brings this passage where he quotes Imam Ali. Imam Ali says that on the path to destination, one must drink the wholesome water of certainty so as to rid us from the fatal slumber of uncertainty. Avoid toxic words which poison the spirit of certainty in you, and avoid these toxic words which ruin your firm belief and prevent you from useful deeds. You know, dear friends, yaqeen is the Arabic of certainty. Certainty is the fountainhead of faith. When we have certainty, then we become steadfast upon what we believe in. Now, of course, when we're talking about certainty, certainty comes about via knowledge. And this knowledge with certainty creates wisdom. But of course, knowledge has to be accompanied via action. If we have lots of knowledge but we don't act, it's really of no use. And if we act but without any knowledge, then why are we doing what we are doing? So knowledge and action and certainty together bring forth the fountains of wisdom. And we have to have certainty if we are to elevate our spiritual status. Of course, keep in mind that there are different levels of certainty. Now, one of the things which can destroy our certainty are toxic words. Now, these toxic words can be both that which we say and we speak ourselves, or toxic words which we listen to. Both need to be refrained from. Both spoken words and heard words that are toxic must be abstained from, for these toxic words will poison the spirit of certainty, they will ruin our firm belief, and they will prevent us from doing useful deeds. The eyes and the ears, and even the tongue, are the inputs to the heart and the soul. So make sure you protect them as much as you can. Another profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. عيني بدمع مشتاقيا قد لسعت حية الهوى كبدي فلا تبي ولها ولا راغي
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general whether a muslim non-muslim or even a disbeliever respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib this means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
وقتی شخصیت امیرالمومنین رو بشناسه در مقابل او خضوع میکند.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridvi.
You know, there is an ayat in the Quran where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that say to the Muslims, إِن كُنْتُمْ تُحِبُّونَ اللَّهَ فَاتَّبِعُونِي يُحْبِبْكُمُ اللَّهِ. That if you really love Allah, then obey me, obey the Prophet. And if you obey the Prophet, Allah will love you. In this ayat, Allah talks about two love, one from an individual to Allah and the other from Allah to the individual. And the only thing linking these two muhabbats is the obedience to Rasulullah. Now that is a theory there in the Quran. We see only one example in the history of Islam where the Prophet testifies. He says, I'm going to give alam to somebody who is rajulan karrar yuhibbullah wa rasuluhu. That individual loves Allah and His Messenger. Not only that, وَيُحِبُّهُ اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ. And Allah and His Rasul also loves him. And this was given to none other than Amir al-Mu'minin Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wa salam. And so when Ali goes there outside that castle of Khaybar, the most famous and courageous fighter of the Jewish community there by the name of Marhab comes outside. And it was a very common tradition among Arabs when they go to the battlefield, they would challenge the opponent. And they would ask to somebody to come and, accept their challenge. And the way they used to talk about themselves was mostly in poetry form. Arabs were more talented in this matter. And so this individual comes there and he says, introduces himself outside the castle where he says, قَدْ عَلِمَتْ خَيْبَرْ إِنِّي مَرْحَبًا. Khaybar knows about me. I am Marhab. And he thought maybe, like yesterday and the day before, whenever they hear the name Marhab, they'll run away. But they didn't know he's somebody else today. And so Amir al-Mu'minin comes forward. And when he comes there, he also uses poetry to introduce himself. And this is where you see the pride Ali takes in his mother. And this is where he says, أَنَا الَّذِي سَمَّتْنِ أُمِّي حَيْدَرًا. I am the one whose mother has named him Haydar. أَنَا الَّذِي سَمَّتْنِ أُمِّي حَيْدَرًا كَلَيْسِ غَابَاتٍ كَرِهَ الْمَنْزَرًا. He says, I am the one whose mother has named him Haydar, the lion. Kalaisi, I am like the lion in the forest. Karihul manzara, when other animals or other people, when they see the lion, they run away. So don't try to, threaten me. You are the one, you run away. Akiluhum bisa'i kayla sandara. And anyone who comes to fight against me, I repay them in full. So don't try to, fight with me. And the rest of the story. And so when we talk about the imamat, the wilayat, you have to realize that according to our theological perspective, our good deeds, our amal, our ibadat, everything, for it to be sahih and correct, is a fiqhi issue. You have to make sure it is according to the fatawa or according to your own ijtihad, if you are a mujtahid. But then the issue of our good deeds and our ibadat, whether it's going to be acceptable in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's not sufficient for it to be correct. There are many other conditions, and one of the important conditions is the wilayat of Ali bin Abi Talib alayhi salatu wasalam. I don't have the habit of talking about my own books, but it is Ghadir. And I would like to mention the book that I have, Shiaism, Imamat and Vilayat, which talks about this issue of Imamat and Vilayat. And one of its chapters is exclusively on the issue of Ghadir itself, different aspects of it, especially how the Orientalists, the Western scholars, have dealt with the issue of Ghadir. You know, it's worth mentioning that one of the religious journals in Iran, by the name of Majalle Safine, they actually selected the fourth chapter of my book, and they got it translated from English to Farsi, and it was published in Farsi in the spring issue of that magazine. And that is about the event of Ghadir. And this is from not a foreign country, this is Islamic Republic of Iran, a Shia country. But, you know, I thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that they considered it to be worthy enough to be translated from English language into Farsi language.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
Qatar displays a dazzling drone show as it unveils the countdown clock for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Doha. The clock, in the shape of an hourglass, is located at Doha's iconic Cornish fishing spot. The distinctive design enables the structure to be seen from any angle and stand out from the spectacular city skyline behind it. The event reveals to fans worldwide that just 1 year to go to the big kickoff, famous athletes including David Beckham and Samuel Eto'o were in attendance at the ceremony. They may not realize it, but they are extremely lucky. Two pandas have been adopted by superstars. Chinese Olympic champion Zhang Jiechi and Paris Saint-Germain footballer Kylian Mbappe have become godparents to a pair of panda cubs. The athletes have both expressed satisfaction with their new role, with Mbappe calling his godparenthood a big moment. The cute cubs are only 3 months old and can barely stand on their own feet. They are called Yuan Dudu and Huan Lili. Space lovers have been treated to an epic lunar eclipse that dazzled the night skies of the Northern Hemisphere. The event is also known as the Blood Moon because of the red haze seen around the moon during the eclipse. The 3.5-hour phenomenon gave stargazers the chance to witness the longest partial eclipse in 580 years. Although NASA calls this celestial event a partial eclipse, around 97% of the moon was cast into a red hue by the Earth's shadow. A total eclipse could also be seen in Russia's far eastern regions. The next longest partial eclipse will take place in around 648 years.
An 11-month-old baby has become an internet sensation after a video of her snowboarding went viral in China. Wang Yuji is a daredevil infant snowboarder whose adorable face sticks out underneath all the protective snow and sports gear. Her parents decided to learn skiing during the winter, but they also wanted to include their baby on the fun of snow sports. While snowboarding might be a bit too early for a toddler who can barely stand or walk, Yuji was not scared at all and even enjoyed it. China, which is hosting the Winter Olympics in a couple of months, is encouraging citizens to try ice and snow sports.
Every year, the roads across this tiny island in northwestern Australia turn scarlet just as millions of crabs leave their homes in the depths of the forest and start marching together all the way to the ocean where they can mate and spawn. The spectacular group voyage on Christmas Island happens after the first rainfall in October or November. And in order to give these red creatures the leeway, locals close off multiple roads across the island. They've even built a special bridge for the crabs so that they can cross the road unharmed. The mesmerizing migration is now a tourist attraction, drawing nature lovers from around the globe.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago.
A new study shows that moderate consumption of tea and coffee may be better for your health than previously thought. The study conducted by a Chinese medical university says tea and coffee can help keep stroke and dementia at bay. And if you're wondering what is meant by moderate consumption, it's defined as something between 2 and 5 cups of tea and coffee, either alone or combined in one day. The study followed more than 360,000 people aged 50 to 74 for over a decade. Some scientists have praised the study as robust. Others, however, say the participants were all selected from the UK Biobank, which means they're healthier than the general population. Pomegranate has a special place in Iranian culture. There is a trace of the fruit everywhere from poetry to cooking. Iranians even hold a pomegranate festival in the fall. This year the event is held in one of the main parks in the capital, Tehran. The festival features different varieties of pomegranates that are grown across Iran. The visitors can also find pomegranate products, including juices, concentrates, and dressings. The event includes cultural parades, music concerts, and traditional live performances. Iranians say they always welcome the pomegranate season, as it's one of the old symbols in the country's literature and art. The Christmas season always brings happiness and joy to people around the world. Many Parisians these days are taking a respite from the daily routines and hitting famous departmental stores now light up with present boxes. Cheerful families could be spotted at Christmas-decorated galleries, Lafayette and Printemps department stores. Automated figures and colorful window displays are the center of attractions for them and their children. It's a season when people buy Christmas gifts for their loved ones and stores make big profits this time around. Many Parisians say they want to take advantage of this period as the government is debating whether or not to impose a COVID-related lockdown. In Venezuela, a large number of musicians are striving for one common goal, and that's setting the Guinness record as the world's largest orchestra. Over 12,000 musicians, mostly children and adolescents, have played together to make that happen. Hundreds of violins, violas, and double basses playing in unison at this setting in Caracas. The musicians are all connected to the country's network of youth orchestras. For them to set a record, over 8,000 instruments had to play at the same time during a 5-minute period of a classical piece. Right now, a Russian orchestra that played the country's national anthem is holding the record. Once done, the crowd of musicians erupted in cheers, lifting their instruments and waving Venezuelan flags. Guinness will announce its decision in the next 10 days.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Tourists and residents in Los Angeles have been mesmerized by a dazzling new event the U.S. city is hosting, with holiday-themed and full of colorful lights. Visitors can enjoy a mile-long walkway covered on all sides with brightly lit installations. Artists from around the world have taken part in the exhibition. The centerpiece display is a cathedral tunnel lit with thousands of bulbs. Another amazing attraction is the orbs, lit up with thousands of torches. The event has been a huge hit with the LA public.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
And it gets to be out in the open, and it's like a perfect night to do it, so it's great.
It's definitely the best. Like, we had to do, like, in a car to go see lights, and then we got to, like, now, like, go around and actually walk and get to see everything up close, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Definitely after the, what, year and a half that we've had.
Yeah.
So.
And it's really nice to see everything up close, because it's like, you see in a photo, but then it's more real and real, so.
Yeah.
The event opened to the public on the 12th of November and will run for 5 nights. Preparations for the event, however, started a month ago. The organizers say millions of bulbs and 17 miles of cables are used for the 18 art installations.
From a gray and gloomy look to a cheery and colorful appearance, that's the story of how a neighborhood in Peru's capital, Lima, is being transformed to become a tourist attraction. A group of artists in Lima are bringing color and joy to this hilly neighborhood by painting the walls of houses. Creating an optical illusion of a giant mural, the project is visible from different spots across the city. The designers are hoping what they did can improve the lives of residents in a neighborhood that was considered to be unsafe before.
What we are doing here is communal work with all the neighbors, and we are doing it because it's important to change the environment through the use of colors. This hill was considered an unsafe and dangerous area of the city, so we decided to change that social stigma through art, which, for me as a muralist, is the best tool to achieve it.
The project was started 5 months ago, and workers are now putting the final touches to their work of art. The mural covers over 300,000 square meters. It's the largest in South America.
The the birth of a baby sloth at an uncharacteristically hasty speed has surprised London zookeepers. A tiny two-toed sloth named Terry was born to a mother, Marilyn, at the weekend. The zookeepers say there was no sign at all that Marilyn was going into labor when they checked her in the morning. However, less than an hour, they spotted something like a tiny arm tucked into her tummy. Marilyn had quietly delivered the baby with no fuss at all while her keepers were chopping up sweet potatoes for her breakfast. The mother and baby are said to be doing well, but the zookeepers still don't know the sex of the baby.
Modern technology has changed our lives in countless ways, with robots now preparing to lend a hand in operation rooms. Surgical robots are on display at the 4th China International Import Expo. One of the machines, dubbed Mesa X, gives assistance in spinal surgery. Employing the robot can lessen bleeding by 50% compared to open surgeries. Another one assists doctors to perform interventional surgeries.
Guide valves in the vessels can be controlled even less than 1 millimeter. Yeah. This is not cannot be achieved by the human hands. With the great market impact from this showcase, we successfully have performed a first case PCI in Hainan Boao on March 13th.
The producers say surgical robots will soon operate in more hospitals around China. Therefore, training centers have been established to help surgeons learn how to operate the new generation of surgical robots.
A group of women are joining hands to protect one of India's key natural sites that is also on UNESCO's heritage list, the Western Ghats, a mountain chain that's facing severe deforestation. The 27 members of this all-female task force are doing all they can to protect the area's rare ferns, mosses, and thousands of other plants. They're using a variety of gardening tools and techniques to preserve species from all over the mountains. Not only that, but they also make artificial conditions and habitats for endangered species from other parts of the world, mainly those affected by climate change. One of the conservationists explained that what they are doing is actually helping the forest regenerate.
We have witnessed the birth of a forest, and that's a very powerful thing. You know, the mind is filled with the ghastly stories of forests being cut, like the Amazon or like the Western Ghats, but here we're witness to the birth of forests as well, and that is the forest itself birthing itself, you see.
The Western Ghats Mountains are home to nearly 5,000 species of flowering plants, but many of them are globally threatened. Only less than half of the area's flora is currently under conservation. Scientists say the outlook for the mountain is very concerning.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me, proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away, proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim. Deen al-Islam, deen al-Azam, ghayr deen Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws, Welcome to the program, Sheikh Tawhid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. In this program, Islamic Laws, we're going to talk about some of the laws related to the Muslims living in the West or in non-Islamic countries, according to Ayatollah Sistani. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography, and we'll be back.
The Grand Ayatollah Sistani comes from the family of scholars and pious men. He learned theological and rational sciences from many eminent and well-known religious scholars. At the age of 5, His Eminence started learning the Holy Quran. He was then admitted in a religious center for reading, writing, and for learning basic mathematics and geography. In the beginning of 1360 Hijri, he started studying basic Hawza lessons. He also studied a number of books on philosophy like Sharh Manzuma-e-Sabzawari and Sharh Ishraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazvini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in fiqh and usul. His Eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Sheikh Tawhid, since we are talking about some of the laws, in fact, released by Ayatollah Sistani, and according to his fatwa, we are talking about these laws pertaining to Muslim residents in the Western countries, in the European or American countries. And we have started a series of, in fact, questions and answers regarding that, according to the jurisprudential laws by Ayatollah Sistani. Let me ask you this question. Lots of countries require people to give their taxes, all right? And tax is something that you cannot basically avoid. This is somehow part of the budgetary system or the economic, procurement of the society and the countries. Can we, in fact, evade giving taxes on the pretext of, let's say, saying that some of these countries exploit or use this tax and use it as a fund to support their war against some Muslim countries? Mm-hmm. All right? Yeah. Is it permissible to refuse to give tax to such countries?
Good. Well, as Muslims, we should be law-abiding, you know? Mm-hmm. We should respect the law and we should abide by the law of the country of which we are a national. For example, if you're living in a non-Muslim country, you have actually accepted to follow, as a national of that country, you have accepted, mm-hmm. in principle, to follow the rules and to act according to the constitution of that country. Therefore, you cannot break the law of that country. If you're required to pay tax you have to pay tax, and you cannot violate the law of that country. You cannot evade tax. Okay. As a Muslim, if you are supposed to give tax, you should give it. And if the government agents, for example, come to your door and ask you to give tax, you cannot escape, and you have to give tax. But if they are not coming to you, you are not going to, you are not supposed to go to their door and present yourself or introduce yourself as a person who would like to give tax. You know, the tax, as you rightly mentioned, is a source of the country's revenue.
Income, yes.
Yeah, it is the source. It is it funds a lot of projects, and the whole country is based on the revenue mm-hmm. generated through the tax system.
Mm-hmm.
So Muslims should not avoid giving or paying tax. They should be law abiding. And if they do, if they avoid giving tax, or if they evade the tax, obviously it will create a kind of bad reputation. Muslims ultimately have a very bad reputation,
mm-hmm.
and that's very bad for Muslims and for Islam as well. Okay?
I see.
We need to present ourselves and to tell others that we are law-abiding, and whatever is just, we will follow it. Okay, unless there is something which is quite contrary against Islam. For example, as we discussed in the previous episode, when it comes to law, to the law of hijab, or let's say drinking wine, there are something which are permitted.
Mm-hmm.
There are many things which are permitted in the West,
yes.
but which are essentially forbidden,
mm-hmm.
or basically forbidden according to Islam. We
yes.
cannot do those things like removing hijab, drinking wine, or going to discos and nightclubs and those things which are not permitted according to Islam. But of course, if we do not go to a nightclub, or if we go to a bar, our reputation will not be damaged as Muslims, okay? But if we avoid giving tax, it will definitely have an impact on the overall image that we build for ourselves as Muslims in those non-Muslim countries.
Not to mention the consequences, the legal consequences that you have to face, like to go to prison, for
you're
example.
You're right.
All right, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and we'll be back.
The Office of Ayatollah Sistani is currently providing the following services. 1. Board of Istifta, replying to religious questions. 2. Helping the poor, needy, homeless, and those who have suffered losses by earthquakes and floods. 3. Sending books for people who want to understand and learn Islam. 4. Hajj delegation. 5. Sending preachers. Board of Istifta is a link between Ayatollah Sistani and people. It provides them with answers to questions pertaining to religious, ideological, social, and educational matters in accordance with the verdicts and rulings of Ayatollah Sistani. For more information, visit the website of Ayatollah Sistani at www.sistani.org. You can also ask your questions through the following email, english@sistani.org.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, and Sheikh Javid is still our guest at the studio, talking about the laws related to the Muslims living in the West. Sheikh Javid, you know, is it permissible for a person to illegally obtain a passport? All right?
Yes.
To buy a passport in the black market,
yeah.
so to speak. Okay?
Yeah.
And change the picture, for example. Sometimes people do that, or forge, for example, a passport, and they use another photo for their passport and change the picture in the passport so that they may go into the country or enter a country without, let's say, the trouble they have in mind. okay? Or maybe then they can let the immigration officials of that country know the truth about their identity. So is it permissible to do so?
Well, it is absolutely forbidden according to Islamic Sharia and also according to the fatwa of His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Sistani to forge a document like a passport to change its image or the picture and to present yourself as someone who belongs to the people of that country to which the passport belongs. Like for example, if you go to, let's say, to the United Kingdom, you cannot change the photo and the passport image and use a fake document to travel to that country. So Ayatollah Sistani is absolutely opposed to doing such practices because it's absolutely forbidden.
I see. Is it also permissible for a person to reside in a non-Islamic or Muslim country with all of its temptations that are there, that confronts people on the street, the school, the television, and the media, all right?
Yeah.
While they have the ability to migrate to one of these Muslim or Islamic countries, although that kind of migration may cause some kind of difficulty or trouble for the person in their question, in residence, for example, the loss of material, for example, the loss of wealth and comfort.
Yeah.
And that might limit or constrain the worldly aspects of their life as well. All right?
Yeah.
Is it permissible to stay in those countries, or the person is required, according to jurisprudence or jurisprudential laws, to travel and migrate to the Muslim countries?
Well, we did discuss the question in one way or the other in one of the previous episodes, but to be brief, I would say that Ayatollah Sistani is of the view that it is actually permissible for a person, for a Muslim family or for a Muslim individual to live in a non-Muslim country and to settle there and to continue to live there, provided that he is confident that he will safeguard his religion, he will practice his religion, and he will continue to educate his children, he will offer his prayers and also do other religious obligations. If one is confident, of course, there's no objection to someone staying there and residing in those countries. Of course, we do have a lot of Muslims, Muslim families living in the West, and they are so practicing families. They are so, you know, so good Muslims that you sometimes really envy those Muslims. You cannot imagine seeing Muslims coming from the West who seem to be more practicing than you actually are, you know?
Yes.
And they observe full hijab, they offer their prayers on time, yes. They never miss their prayers, they give their religious tax or their gives the khums and zakat, you know? There are hundreds and thousands of such practicing Muslims living in the West. And so, generally speaking, there's no objection according to Islam, to Ayatollah Sistani, living in those countries.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. That was the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun La ilaha illa hum Ghaffarun Jameelun Wahhabun Latifun Tawwabun Samiun Basir La ilaha illa hum Wahidun Qadir.
Mindful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
از پیغمبر اکرم یاد بگیر پدرزن نان و گوشت رو پیغمبر داد.
In the wedding of Imam Ali alayhi salam and Hazrat Fatima salamullah alayha, Prophet Muhammad accepted to buy the bread and meat for the ceremony and asked Imam Ali only to buy oil and date. In this way, he wanted to reduce the expenses of the ceremony, which were all on the shoulder of the groom, namely Ali. In fact, there was no pretentious formality in the wedding of the daughter of the Prophet of Islam. and many people were invited to the ceremony too.
الان تو جامعه متاسفانه داره این فاصله رو دور میکنه و شما میدونید این دور شدن.
Now compared with today's world, you can see how these formalities make families and friends keep away from each other. It also causes depression and sins like backbiting and slander among the families too. The relatives, because of these formalities, are apart and sometimes even they do not know each other very well. The main cause of this separation of family members and relatives is nothing but pretentious formality and takalluf. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge. We are discussing the topic called the Charter of Islamic Governance, and we are observing the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in different sermons of this valuable book, where Imam Ali alayhi salam mentions about some of the foundational principles that guide and make up this charter of Islamic governance. And we are presently discussing the 87th sermon of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And this sermon talks about the communities of the past, I mean the situation of the communities before the coming of Islam. And there is much to learn, because by understanding these communities we can find out how we can solve the problems of our communities through Islam. And we reach this phrase where Imam Ali alayhi salam says, where he says, قَدْ دَرَسَتْ مَنَارُ الْهُدَى, that those lighthouses of guidance were gone. They weren't there. They were ignored. They weren't given the opportunity. They were not present there for the guidance of the people, and therefore the people continued in their state of misguidance.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Then Imam Ali alayhi salam goes on to say, وَظَهَرَتْ أَعْلَامُ الرَّدَى. And instead, once those lighthouses were moved out of place, rather were not existing, were not present for guiding the people, there were now flags of misguidance. وَظَهَرَتْ أَعْلَامُ الرَّدَى. And now the flags of disgrace, the flags of, you know, lowliness, these had risen and were fluttering above the heads of the people. They could see these flags. You know, a flag is a signpost. It's a way to show your identity, who you are. You see, it is something that gives you pride, honor. But instead, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, قَدْ ظَهَرَتْ أَعْلَامُ الرَّدَى. Instead, the flags, these flags that were rising, were actually flags of lowliness and dishonor and disgrace. Why? Because in different parts of the world, the Roman Empire, you could see, it had raised a flag. But what was this flag about? It was about this world. It's about some material thing. It's about some, you know, very lowly and useless forms of desires, you see. It was just about that. If you look at the Roman Empire, yes, even that had risen a flag. Apparently there was glamour and grandeur, but that flag, its reality was dishonor and disgrace to humanity in the way the humans were reduced to entities that were just similar to some kind of complicated animals. In some places, even worse than that. If you look at the Arabian Peninsula, the same situation. And different parts of the world. So the world before Islam was like that. There was, in different corners of the world, you would have the different forms of people, different types of people that are causing others to get misguided. They are the devils, basically. They had spread their tentacles everywhere and were, you know, kind of, you know, strangling humanity and removing the life of the human beings. In every corner of the world that you would go at that time, this was the situation. And we can see the reminiscence in this world and at this time also, which inshallah I shall discuss shortly.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
So we notice that just like before Islam, the flags of disgrace were raised in the same way today we see in this world of today. There are many flags being raised. But what are these flags? Flags in the name of freedom. Flags in the name of humanity. All of these different flags, but their reality is disgrace to humanity. So this disgrace to humanity is basically because that particular aspect of a human being that was truly valuable and beautiful that could actually create the right positive change in the societies is being completely ignored.